going to do two short ones. My mother had a miscarriage a few years ago, and this is a letter, let's say, that I'm writing to my brother. Dear Dylan, still in the womb you left us unblemished. No stain of man's collective breath, no hint of weathered heart, just Platt's clear eye. You watch at times and keep me safe, like a puppeteer of the gods. And though we never met, I see you all the time, in Noah's smile, in Quiva's wit, in Mummy's heart. You are in us all. Sleep well, little angel. Rest up for when we meet again and stroll as brothers should against the wind. Just a little someone who wants to meet you. Matthew. The other one I'm not really quite sure what it's about. It's called Finale. When all is said and done, when stars have bled and clocks have failed, one picture shall remain. Lovers lying, hands entwined in a roofless temple, like statuettes of passions played. In this dark celestial kaleidoscope, this theatre to gods of cloud and cutting rain, nothing else remains. Image cuts the coil of death. Eyes flicker, hearts focus, minds shudder. In their swan song moments, men destroy their walls so they can roam the dark like cats, tainted hearts that beat in time and never looking back.
Good one, Matthew. And next we have Dean Brown.
This is a late draft of a thing I might call Portrait of a Man Who Looks at the Sea, and that's the Homeric Wyandak Sea. Imagine walking like him down the shore, there tarred and racked. Each comber cambers flat, then singes to this wintry finish. A door opens to live herring on the welcome mat. Is sea dark like Merlot, this moon a cork launched to the roof, her cheaper pungent dark with notes of shipwreck for that classic spark. And if I say these curlews, these gulls or terns content me, let above this quiet coast whatever flare burns to the surface burn the brighter now, and show me what it cost as it comes lapped in at the amber shallows. Dutch cans and bone and glass, a kind of flow of spoiled trouvaille, bleached magazines, a shoe.
And now, all the way from Ballyfergan, do we look at it?
I'm trying to write one at the moment on the refugee situation, and I'm stuck. But this one, I've written before, it's on Syria, before the refugees started streaming out. Syria. Those heroes on the street are blind, their valor bred in blood that's hot and spewed in rage of right or wrong, molting in the death of father, brother, the wounded and the dying dragged from sight. Across the Turkish border lies the truth. In makeshift wards, mid dearth and want, the young, battle left to mend their wounds, lie longing to rejoin their comrades, sending cousins to their doom. But like those heroes on the streets, supine warriors' lust is blind, for soldiers with shrapnel in their spines are little more effective than cut comrades nursing phantom limbs.
Thank you, Louis. That's great. And next we have Dawn Harding.
Say well done to Noel tonight for his great reading and Park for reading his book. And I go home tonight, apparently. This poem is called Leaving Lichfield, and it's about Gerard Boone, whose 200th anniversary is today. And UCC published a book recently about him and this poem is in it. And I was in UCC today. A friend of mine was getting a doctorate for literature. His name is Ted McHale. Oh. He wrote George Boone's biography. Leaving Litchfield was the name of his house in Black Rock Road. He came from Litchfield in England, and he left his house one day when it was pissing rain, walked to university to give a lecture, and he got drenched and he died of pneumonia shortly afterwards. So this is called Leaving Litchfield. After leaving Litchfield, his drowning tool became his overcoat. Immersed in his convolutions, he trekked through Ballintemple, oblivious to the rain hanging heavy on his shoulders. On down Dead Woman's Hill, his pocket watch testing durability, he took shelter in the tall mast on the quay. There, inspecting some solutions to his quandaries, he meditated. The simplicity of rain on the his Everest, mist upon mist of liberating all resistance, base camp will suffice for gadflies and romance to glory in. Dark ages sidled in through the grey keys, the language lost in dog-eared notebooks, but eventually relayed from tall masts beyond the moon. Thank you.
We actually live two houses down from the house, and it's been preserved quite beautifully in its original state. It's an amazing house. And I've heard that he was actually, after he was drenched, they wet his bedclothes and
yeah,
his,
give him cold yes. baths.
Yeah, cold baths yeah. to cure him,
yeah.
and that killed him.
Yeah.
I know in the homeopathy you cure like with like, but this was carrying it a bit too far. For man. Anyway, Patricia Walsh is our next reader.
Thank you, Susan. This is called Brother Death. Never want a trying, you start and stand alone beside the last bit of trail meted out. Acknowledge your news up to now. An inconvenience started at, a shame declared. What is not natural anymore? Insinuating propriety in face of salvation. Giving kisses to others to downsize me. Arranging parties for beloveds, photographing the dead. What I wanted was an excuse to sail away. Sail at my own tears, a last execution in my absence. Despite a common face. Not wanted anymore, a lot to live with. Holding on to letters like bales of straw, a perfect romance comes out of the corner. Interrogation intended as social interest, pouncing to avoid water as assault. A dead history chimes the clock. Walking forever is your lot in life. Promises of marriage dull the air. Nothing I can see I do can change that. Interruptions have their place, but not now. Something's had to do done. Attack conversation. I'll call sweeping and care beneath the dark room. Some satisfaction sprawling to a halt. Thank you.
Thank you, Patricia. And next we have Kieran Garvey.
Where is my anchor? Who is there to ground me, to hold me tightly, and tell me that I have landed? I am tired of this floating like a moth on glass, attracted to the flickering light, but unable to land. I continue to flounder, like a homeless fish out of water. Will I ever be somebody's catch and be landed? Entitled to an acre of love, perhaps I've been granted and sold mine. I feel like a dispossessed, a gent, not landed. This is a companion piece to the poem. This was written recently. It's called Tenzing and Spoiling Bow. And I'm sure Kotha, and I'm sure Lorach, and I'm sure Oshlach, Foom, Bean, Nadurach. Yet, I still tense when I speak this language. Tonga Mavuntra, instead of being intensely passionate. X chromosome, Y chromosome emerged from the Gaelic genetic gene pool, yet I only swim confidently in the English Channel. A victim of the expectations of others, but ultimately a casualty of my own unrealistic standards. I feel guilty for the death of a spoken language, a tongue which forms part of my unique heritage. I am remorseful for my betrayal, a response to an ego which is not accepting of mistakes, mispronunciations, or misspelling. Tá grá agus gan agam don dagan seo, but also hated for exposing my cultural vulnerabilities istoka. I must climb my own mountain, place a flag on the summit, agus I a lord can strow. An inheritance, not a millstone. The time has come to immerse. Thank you.
Thank you, Karen. And next we have Max Peden.
Short sample. This is just a short cafe poem because it wasn't ready tonight. And it's for Alchemy Cafe. I love it.
Oh,
woo! Love Alchemy. It's from Michelle. It's our star, our report. An alchemy does summon me to savour to Sajava with citrus buns and fruity scones. With a tincture of Havana, a labyrinth in wraps or gable, a labyrinth of blue and lapis in wraps the gable end. Alas, the artist out of residence. Farewell to Peter, missing friend. So that's for Peter Missing, our artist friend.
Oh, God.
So that's his one, and this is a short song. It's kind of it's a sad piece, and it is that's my favourite poem at a workshop. And I couldn't go beyond the first one I learned when I was four. We were made learn this poem at school, and I thought it was a real tearjerker. And then I went off and I had two sons myself, and my two childhood friends lost their two sons, and I nearly lost them my own. So I found the words became very dear to me. So I'm going to do a short song to see if the host is quiet tonight. It's called Mother, for those of you that know it. I apologize. I do not grudge thee, Lord, I do not grudge my two strong sons that I have seen go out to break their strength and die. And though that they end a few in a bloody pursuit of a glorious thing, they will be remembered among the nations, and generations will remember them and call them blessed. I will speak their names to my own heart in the long night. Little names that were familiar once around my dead hearth. Lord, your earth hard on mothers, we suffer in their coming, but in their going. And though I grudge them not, I weary of the long sorrow. And though I have my joy, my sons were faithful and they fought. I do not grudge them, Lord. Short and sweet.
Thank you, Michael. Lovely. You should have all the corporate advertising.
What was that?
The first poem.
Oh, I
know. Sean Bent.
Just got two short poems tonight. This first one, it was actually from a poem I wrote about 2 years ago, but it was about seven stanzas. I just ripped it down to one. So I'll just read out that one. called swimming. If I drink the water, bring the blue in. It will twist the mind to a slow ruin. Tar, last of the prettier innards, and then all the will to swim will wither. I got one a bit more uplifting than that. It's kind of a therapy one I wrote in the last few weeks, just to kind of, you know, not to be my magnus opus, just to sort of keep my mind on track. It's called To Function. I think my mind develops when it creates. When applied to deliver outputs. If I'm stuck in my own pit of mirrors, I crumble and crack the glass with the shrapnel. To clean my room today is to groom my station. My nucleus of blueprints, so that upon initiation from the outside environment, my internal cascade facilitates a timely reaction. And thus, I function. Thank you.
Next, we have George.
I think it's really good that we commemorate George Boole. He's very heavily embedded to that guy right now. He just graduated from that university. Nice one. Didn't mean to fish for that, but nice one. Called currency. A man attacked on the street, unarmed, would give both his arms for a gun. If attacked by an aggressor with a gun, and he'd wrap six fingers, if he had them, around the coal black metal, or three fingers, two trigger fingers, and a thumb. If his imagined gun had two barrels and two triggers in the blueprints for its design to end life. A hand enters a shake on behalf of a mouth that is lonesome for food. The receiving hand makes gestures of thanks to the giving hand and the kindness of the intellect on whose behalf it acts. The hand hungry thanks the hand that filled it with money. Money is good. It is lighter than a cow, but can be traded with similar nourishment depending on the produce of others. Tobacco is good when its spirit is used by the wise of a tribe to bring peace and protect a household, not to be burned excessively. Natural medicines are poisons if misused. Nature has her fun. Money is as innocent as the gun.
Thanks, Gerald. That was a good one. Congratulations on being a fully fledged dramatist. Well done. Okay. Next, we have Stephen Higgins.
Steven.
Is he gone?
Gone for a fag.
Okay. Paul.
Thank you. And here's one where I finished recently. It's called Defense Forces Seek Artists. Top officials are refusing to comment on speculation that modern military training techniques and codes of engagement are undergoing a revolutionary shift towards anti-war activity. One example rumored to be a highly innovative diffusion gesture aimed to disarm aggression through immediate exposure to spontaneous music, practical jokes, rap, and dance. The trend may well be spreading as reports continue of platoons trading hardware for guitars, microphones, portable amps, and venue space to hold non-stop concerts without borders, as major arms manufacturers wield placards alongside scrap metal merchants from the anti-art movements. Meanwhile, Queen Sirikit still manufactures new reefs, dumping tanks, armored cars into the sea. Fish numbers have swelled significantly, diverse now beyond all expectation despite draconian defamation laws, her generals' newly formed a cappella barbershop quartets and popular YouTube channels allegedly feature Her Royal Highness throwing in the crown jewels, having borrowed the Irish Defence Forces strategy to melt down all lethal metal objects to form cymbals, xylophones, drums, and instrument strings, plans to adopt the ever more popular slogan, sorted out with art, poets with relevant translation skills urgently required within.
Well, revolution starts here in
November. I know. Where else?
Sounds like a plan Paul will follow. Is Stephen Higgins back?
No.
Okay, Liam O'Donovan, you're reading your short story. Very short story.
Last August, I wrote a novel, an urban fantasy novel featuring witches and vampires and werewolves and that kind of thing. Basically, this is following up to that. It's for a series of short stories set in the world that dip in and out of what happened because of that novel. All you need to know is that there was a plague, not the plague, a plague, that wiped out quite a lot of humanity. The witches revealed themselves to the world as they had found a cure, and that caused turmoil when the world realised there were supernaturals among them. Tyrone slammed shut the car door and was confronted by not knowing what to do. Well, he did know what to do. He wanted to drop to the ground and not move. 3 weeks would do it. It would almost certainly be over in 3 weeks. The rain would have fallen. He'd be wet, soaked in fact. He'd have pissed himself, shit himself. He'd be hungry, famished, starving. Would the falling rain give him enough hydration to keep him alive? His son wouldn't be alive, not in 3 weeks. Slowly he moved, shuffling cautiously to the back seat. His knees felt weak. He didn't know how long he could keep bringing the car. He needed it today. He had to collect Peter's belongings. They still had health insurance. Technically they could still afford the private room. It wasn't that money was the issue, she was the issue. The hospital said if it was palliative care, he had to be on the terminal ward. Tyrone sighed. They could have picked a more euphemistic term, something that put the patients' families at ease. Most of the people on that ward had no family though. No one to overturn their DNR, or their NMR as it was called. No magical rehabilitation. It was final, more or less. The odds weren't good without magic. 90% death rate. 1 in 10 people survived without a witch. It had been hell. People were dying from something. No one could understand, and no doctor could treat it. Everyone was terrified. Tyrone's family had prepared themselves, readied themselves for death. They didn't find God. They never believed in God. Peter hated the religious kids in school. He taught them judgmental. They called him a freak. He had blue hair, but they'd been calling him a freak long before that, ever since he had both his ears pierced. They said only gay guys had both ears pierced. Tyrone wouldn't care if his son was gay. He'd give anything to see him live, to marry the love of his life, to grow up, fuck around, and be stupid before falling for the one, man or woman. A big wedding, a celebration of his starting his own life and his own family. Tyrone didn't know what had happened to his family. Peter was his shining star, his future. Jess was the love of his life. She could do no wrong. That's what he thought when he exchanged those vows. He picked up Peter's belongings from the back seat, pushing the door shut with his foot, and walked to the front door with his hands full. Fuck, he said. His keys were in his pocket. He put down the box with all of Peter's comforts and pulled his keys out. The hospital had given up on them. They tried to make Peter comfortable. They didn't think he was in pain, but Tyrone saw him twitch in his sleep, in his coma. Through his plague, it amazed Tyrone that the hospitals never smelled of bleach or disinfectant. They didn't have that hospital smell. They didn't need it. Nothing really medical happened there. There was nothing medical to the plague. Not that they could find, at least. It was magical, or the cure was magical. They had a cure. Fucking shit. Fuck! Tyrone felt the pain sear up the arch of his foot. His toes were crushed. Stupid, kicking the wall. He never thought of violence. Thought of nothing. But he'd give her up. He had to, if he was to save Peter. Thanks.
Thank you, Niamh. And now to wrap up the evening, we have Lee Paul Weber.
Wrap up. Thanks, Sue. I do poetry through sounds, but I always try to give some general idea what's the song about. So I'll start with this. The walls in our house are so thin that I can hear my neighbor's nails growing. So the song is called The Divine Moments of Silence.
I'm going to go to the next one.